Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
So we have a do with the SFU pipe band. Talk a little about the weekend, Paul. Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It is Monday, July 22nd. I'm your host, Magnus Tewald. Joining me here in the studio...
Peter R.H. There's going to be the woman from the Peak.
Yes, Hannah Fraser will be joining us in a little while to tell us what's up in the Peak this week. We have some good stories for this week. We have an interview with the SFU Pipe Band. As you may or may not know, the SFU Pipe Band is a world championship band and travels to many events. And they were recently at the Skagit Valley Highland Games. And Connor Ashton, our music director here, did an interview with them. I say his name wrong.
Ezra Levant of
Ezra Levant.
I met him in person, and I took him to task because Conrad Black was on a speaking tour with these Rebel News people, and I wasn't expecting to see him, and I said, so I said to him, well, why
do you want to save that for your conversation?
Yeah, sure, I'll save it. I just don't know how much to preface things.
Yeah.
But
Ezra Levant is the editor of Rebel News, which is a well-known right-wing
It's a news. Podcast. He's not really an editor. He has his own little show on it. And
yeah.
It's audio-visual. It's not like a newspaper.
Right. And a sort of well-known commentator and pundit and agitator for conservative...
Agitator.
He is, kind of.
Well, I agitated the agitator.
So there you go. Well, we'll hear your story later on. Hannah Fraser will be here from the Peak to talk about what's coming up in this issue. We'll have our weekly discussion with Pablo Vimas in Gardening with Embark. Plus some great music, Bird Note, and a whole lot more. First, this weekend, another dramatic weekend in American politics. Of course, last weekend we had the attempted assassination on Donald Trump. And this week, on the Democrat side, Joe Biden dropped out of the race.
Well, he did the right thing as such. I mean, I guess he got COVID and he got a bit sick, and he just sort of, I mean, he was sort of holding on a bit too long, but you know, it's funny that he became very criticized for not dropping out.
Mm-hmm.
But now he sort of, I don't know, maybe he would have done it eventually or whatever, but so there you go.
I'm sure it was a very tough call for him, you know. I mean, he had to face up to his very personal issues as a gentleman getting right up there in age.
Well, the other thing is that now he can pay attention to the presidential duties until
the remainder of the time.
Well, I mean, I think he's last week, or I think it was last week, I talked about other presidents who were who were not in the tip-top shape and they were still president, like Wilson had a stroke. And for nearly a year, or a little bit over a year, I think his second wife was really, they argue, running it. And Franklin Roosevelt, from 1944 to 1945, he was doing like 4 hours a day. And mm-hmm. not that it was, he was, I mean, it was, in many ways, with Franklin Roosevelt, he was sort of seen, even though it wasn't that much he was spending because he was so sick, he had hypertension and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But he was seen as basically indispensable in a way for his intellect, even though I have a few disagreements as a few of the sensibilities he had. But so I think he'll do well until January. One thing I think that's been sort of criticized by people is how they're the Israeli conflict, and I guess they're sort of caught from both sides, because one side thinks you're not supporting Israel enough, the other ones think you're doing it too much.
Well, that's very much the case with that particular issue, is both sides are very strong on what they believe, and there's not a lot of common ground there, you know. So, I mean, there's no way to please both sides, which is why that conflict goes on and on and on, and doesn't seem to have a resolution anytime soon. I mean, it's more complicated than that, but I mean, that's sort of a key point. I think with Joe Biden, though, you know, for me, I mean, you know, I only see what I see in public. And, you know, I mean, he's definitely slowing down. I saw a quick clip of him from the 2000 campaign where he came bounding up on the stage with his big grin and, you know, looking very much like the Joe Biden of old compared to the Joe Biden we see today, who's definitely a lot older. And whether or not he's got the ability today to do the job, and he probably does, anyone who's had older parents knows how dramatic the change over 4 years can be when you're in your 80s. I mean, you can go from fine to very not fine, and 4 years is a very, very long time at that stage of life. You know, and, you know, even if he was good for this year, and, you know, despite some verbal missteps and stuff, which he would have been called on every single time he did it, which from a political point of view would have been really damaging. Just the general issue of, you know, you can see the transition from 4 years ago to today. And what is that going to mean from today to another 4 years, or really 4.5 years before he'd finish a second term? So I think it was probably the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think it's also kind of, but the Trump team is sort of maybe in disarray because they weren't expecting him. Yeah. But that vice president pick was the Trump team is kind of bad. That guy is sort of
J.D. Vance. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he's. If I were to bet, I would bet on the Democrats now, because the vice presidential pick they picked is sort of kind of out there. There's a lot of questionable things about him.
And he's kind of like just another mini Trump, in the sense that he, these days, espouses all the same values and professes his loyalty. So what does he do to broaden the appeal of the Trump campaign beyond what Trump already offers, right? I mean, he solidifies, you know, the message for Trump's base, but they're not going anywhere no matter what. You know, I mean, you know, his old statement about being able to head down to Fifth Avenue and shoot someone and not lose voters probably holds as true today, if not more so. So J.D. Vance isn't really adding anything to their campaign in their sense of, you know, broadening their campaign to independent voters, you know, the sort of people between them and the Democrats that sway back and forth that they have to get to win the election.
There's a podcast that's called If Books Could Kill, kind of, it's called If Books Could Kill.
Yep.
And then they go over these books that they think are ridiculous or bestsellers. And one was the book he wrote, J.D., Hillbilly, whatever it was. And if you go to that podcast, because they did it about a year ago, analyzing the book, and it's sort of interesting how they analyze that book. Well, I thought it was sort of interesting. It saves you from reading the book and seeing the film. And the book is more like an actual essay than the film, which I haven't read the book, haven't seen the film, but I heard their podcast about it.
Right.
So it might fill you into sort of the problems with them if people hear that.
Right. All right. Well, if you're for the political nerds out there, this must be a super exciting time to watch what's going to happen over the next few weeks before the Democratic National Convention, when they will affirm their nomination for their candidate. Joe Biden is part of his stepping down endorsed Kamala Harris, as have a lot of other big wigs. But who knows who else will raise their hand to perhaps say they want to have a try too.
Yeah, well, Kamala Harris, she's been... people have seen her oddly. She just seems a bit of an odd personality through the almost 4 years. It's kind of funny that people are sort of backing away from it, because some people just thought, well, she's making an odd statement here, she's making an odd statement there. But I don't know. I get, you know what? I think she could win. If she was nominated, she could win. But it's interesting that... over the almost 4 years, she has been seen as a bit odd in her
Yeah, I haven't behavior. Seen I haven't seen a lot of that firsthand, but I've definitely read some articles that have made that point, and I guess we'll see how that plays out during the campaign. I presume she's going to be selected, because I think sure someone could raise their hand and say, you know, I'm going to go too, but a lot of the heavy hitters and a bunch of the possible alternative candidates have already lined up behind her, and 3 weeks is not a lot of time to raise your profile enough to challenge the lead she's kind of got at this point, but you never know what happens.
The thing is, what's the running mate going to be? That'll be interesting too. So he has to pick somebody, so that's something that's going to be done, I guess.
Yeah, and from what I've heard, probably a Midwest governor who's in one of those battleground states that they talk about.
Oh, you've heard something I haven't.
Yeah, I just heard some speculation. I mean, it was not insider knowledge. It's more people looking at the situation and going, what choice makes sense? And, of course, there's those states in the presidential election, because of the way it's chosen with the electors and stuff. You know, where it's not just the popular vote, it sort of comes down to a breakdown state by state, and you have to win each state to get the delegates. And so there's certain states that are in play, and that's where they're going to choose somebody from. Those states that could go either way for either campaign, and so you want to do whatever you can to sort of sway those ones. Because, you know, some states like California are solidly Democratic, and they're going to vote Democratic, and all those delegates are going to go to the Democratic candidate, just about no matter what. So you don't have to worry too much. And she's already from California. But you don't have to worry too much about those. It's those ones that could go either way and that sort of really sort of determine the outcome.
Well, that in 2016, I think this is why he won. He didn't win the popular vote in Donald Trump. But he sort of just said, I'm not going to bother with California, and I'm going to put all my energy in things. So he sort of, whereas Hillary Clinton seemed to be haywired, going like a chicken with the head cut off, whereas Trump was more like, hey, I'm not even going to try California. Get my supporters, if they want to be obsessed with it, but I'm not going to. So, but he that vice president pick, I think a lot of what was happening is that the Trump voters going to vote for Trump. But the people that were really anti-Trump, some of the younger ones that didn't like how the Israeli conflict was going, were just not going to vote either way. They're not going to. But I think now it's going to be more of that vote for the Democrats that they maybe would have lost. So I think they could pull ahead now.
All right, well, we'll see what happens. It's 4 months or a little under 4 months to the election, and lots can happen between now and then.
Yeah.
All right. So on to our first feature today. This is Connor Ashton is our music coordinator here at CJSF, and someone very proud of his Scottish and Gaelic heritage. He wears his kilt as his formal wear whenever it's required. And he did an interview with the SFU Pipe Band. They are one of the best pipe bands in the world and are part of every convocation ceremony here at SFU or a contingent to the band. piping the graduands into Convocation Mall as part of the ceremony. They're six-time World Championship winners and also the Grade 1 champions at the recent Skagit Valley Highland Games. The current two times World Drum Corps champions in 2022 and 23. Connor recently interviewed the leader of the SFU pipe band, Rob Marshall.
Welcome back to CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm joined once more by Rob McNeil, president of the SFU pipe band. Thanks so much for coming back on the air.
My pleasure. It's great to be back.
We find ourselves at the Skagit Valley Highland Games down in just north of Seattle in Washington. It's a nice hot summer day here, and the SFU Pipe Band just competed and won in the Grade 1 division here at the Skagit Highland Games. What's next on the calendar for the band?
Well, this is the second to last regional competition for us. We've got essentially a week off, but working on practicing and other things. And then we will be heading down the I-5 again to Enumclaw for the Pacific Northwest Highland Games the last weekend of this month. Here it's a two-day games there, and it's been one that we've been going to for many years, and it's like the season finale.
It's a big one. I was out of town during the BC Highland Games, and I've gone to that every single year, so I was so miffed that I wasn't able to make it this year, but that's normally where I kind of catch the start of the SFU Pipe Band season. And then, of course, coming up in August, we have the Worlds.
Yes, the World Pipe Band Championships coming up in the mid-August. And the band is going to be leaving the weekend of the, I think it's August 10th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and then it leads up to the championship the following weekend, the Friday and the Saturday.
And it's huge. I mean, everybody comes to that one. We have bands from Australia, from Canada, from the UK, from all over the world, and it's a prestigious band. It is I like to call it the Wimbledon of pipe bands.
Yes, it certainly is. You know, all bands gear up for that.
Yeah.
And there are a few other bands that are going to be going over from Canada.
Mm.
One of the bands that was competing today in Grade 3, Greatland Crossing Pipe Band, is going to be competing in the Grade 3A.
Fantastic. In addition to the SFU Pipe Band, which is Grade 1, the highest grade of competition, there's also a Grade 3 and Grade 4 RMM, the Robert Malcolm Memorial Band, and they do great because they are kind of the SFU band's feeder program and get people trained in the ways of piping and drumming.
Yes, that's right. And our Grade 3 band and Grade 4 band, mm-hmm. were here today,
mm-hmm.
and Grade 4 band got third in their medley event today.
Yeah.
And the Grade 3 band got second,
yes.
in both events in the aggregate.
Fantastic. Yes. Good stuff. Now, I know that also in other big news, two-time reigning World Drum Corps champions headed by our very own Reed Maxwell. And for those of you who don't know, Reed actually received an honorary doctorate from the university not too long ago.
Yes, that's right. It's now it's Dr. Maxwell.
I know, right?
It was a great ceremony. It was so great to be able to see him honored by the university.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell from the presentation he was so humbled and overwhelmed by it. Yes.
He has so much tact and precision, yet at the same time so much humility and grace as a person. And I've chatted with him a few times after concerts, and he always makes time to talk with everybody. And I appreciate that about the accessibility of this band. Everyone is of a high caliber, but at the same time, they still welcome you like family.
Yeah, exactly. And the other element, you know, of it is that we were very much a teaching organization that reflects what Simon Fraser University does.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was also great to be able to see Reed honored for his contributions to teaching there, which has just been tremendous over these years.
When I come up on Tuesday evenings, I host a show in the late night, 8 to 10, but normally around 6 or 7 p.m., I'll occasionally catch the band practicing outside, and that's usually where Rob and I bump into each other, so it was nice and fortuitous to see each other at these games. Is there anything else on the calendar that we should be aware of after the Worlds?
No, not that we will be competing after the Worlds, but then when back in September we get together, the junior band starts again, and we've been also very successful with regard to recruiting for new members.
Oh, beautiful.
By doing different things, some social media aspects, performances in schools. And it has helped because the players that we get in today, our hope is that by nurturing and mentoring and training, that they could be the SFU pipe band members of the future.
I believe so.
And so then with that, in October, convocation resumes again.
Yes. Always nice to hear. For those of you who don't know, when students convocate, they graduate at SFU, they are piped in by members of the SFU pipe band. And it's always such a cool experience because the acoustics in Convocation Hall are quite unique, coming down the steps from the academic quadrangle, and then you have this wide open space between the Maggie Benson Center and the library, and it's just a nice outdoor experience, which... It is where the pipes shine.
Yes, it's a great ceremony all around. We've been doing that for over 40 years now.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and I tell people the first year that we became the SFU Pipe Band, I remember the first year we did convocation, it was one day, all day, on a Saturday in June. And now you look at, it's basically like four full days in June and two full days in October. It just shows you the growth of the university and the number of graduates that have come through. And I think of, like, everyone that comes down, you just sort of see them and think of the years that they put into that. And from the pipe band's perspective, we're performing for them.
Absolutely.
It's all about them that day.
Thank you again so much. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. We'll also speak briefly after this about how we can, as a radio station, help promote the band as a learning opportunity, because it's not just a performance practice, but it's also an educational opportunity, and we are blessed to have such a high caliber institution and group such as the SFU Pipe Band. So again, thank you so much, Rob. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, it's great to see you again, and this time in a different setting rather than on the mountain.
Indeed.
We're in Mount Vernon.
Fantastic. If you want to find more information about the SFU Pipe Band, just go to sfupipeband.com.
Correct.
And you can also follow them on social media. I believe it's at SFU Pipe Band.
Yes, we're on Facebook, we're on X, we're on Instagram, and also our YouTube channel.
Oh, and you can catch performances from multiple Highland Games. They usually put up the videos pretty much right after.
Yes, that's right. The performances of SFU Pipe Bands appear on our YouTube channel. And all the performances from today of all of the bands appear on the BC Pipers Association YouTube channel. And I've been helping to do some of the recordings because they're also an educational and learning opportunity for the pipe bands.
Absolutely. Would highly recommend everybody to go check out the band as well and keep an eye out for August when the band competes at the Worlds. Again, thank you so much, Rob. We'll talk with you soon.
My pleasure. Thanks again.
We'll be right back.
That was the SFU Pipe Band live at the Skagit Valley Highland Games just last month. Thanks to Connor Ashton for that interview. Joining me in the studio this morning is Hannah Fraser of The Peak. Good morning.
Hello.
So The Peak is putting out its special disability issue this week. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, that's right. This week's issues are Disability Pride issue, as July is Disability Pride Month, a time to celebrate people with disabilities and learn about what people with disabilities have to say about what Disability Pride means to them. We at The Peak are so happy to be able to share these stories about Disability Pride in this week's issue, especially as some of our writers have disabilities, and we're able to share really authentic perspectives this week with us.
That's great. And all the stories you're featuring this week are focusing on issues of ability and disability.
Mm-hmm,
so tell me about, yeah.
Yeah, so one of them is a features piece, a long-form features piece from our opinions editor, Olivia Visser. It's titled, I'm Proud of My Mobility Aids. And Visser writes that disability pride for her is, quote, disability pride for her, quote, looks like practicing self-love by embracing her mobility aids, and that sometimes pride is a process and it's not always easy. I really like this one excerpt from the piece. It reads, I'd be lying if I said it's always been easy to feel pride about my disabilities. What is there to be proud of? Chronic pain, debilitating fatigue. I don't personally feel like my disabilities define me as a person, but they're a huge part of who I am. And while I'm not a big fan of calling disabled people brave for surviving within their circumstances, I'm proud of myself for what I continually overcome. To deny space in my identity for my disabilities would be to deny an entire part of myself. Disability pride is the joy of being unapologetically yourself, disability and all. And that's from the fourth last paragraph of this piece.
Great. And who's the writer again?
Olivia Visser. She's our opinions editor.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And what's the next story you're featuring?
So another piece in this week's issue around disability pride is a really fun arts and culture piece by Izzy Chung, who's our arts and culture editor. It's titled Disabled Drag Queens on Coast Salish Territories. The article showcases five different drag superstars who, quote, showcase the intersections between art, disability, and queerness. And the queens featured are Peaches and Screams, Lavender Flame, Dyslexia, Carly Hart, and Boy Gorgeous. And an SFU artist, Den Kennedy, illustrated each of the queens in a really adorable way for the piece as well.
Excellent. A nice crossover between disability pride and queer pride.
Yeah, of course. And that's our issue next week.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
And your the final feature for this week?
Yeah, so the final feature is a humor one. It's from our staff writer, Haley Miller. Excuse my language, but it's titled, Shit People Say to My Disabled Ass. And Miller writes in the introduction of the piece that, quote, as someone who was born disabled, nothing makes me cackle more than the ridiculous remarks of arrogance that grace my everyday life. Happy Disability Pride Month, whether you celebrate it or not, I frankly never give it much thought. I do, however, love a good statement that keeps human decency more off kilter than my Humpty Dumpty balance. And, unquote, discussing disability pride from a more serious perspective is great, but also adding some humor into these discussions, which I think we do a lot at The Peak, mm-hmm. is just as valuable as well. It helps readers approach these issues that they might be scared to approach or don't know too much about in a more easy way. So we're glad to be featuring this piece as well.
Yeah, that sounds like an article that is both humorous but dark as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, one of the things she features here. So one of the sayings is, have you tried eating organic to cure yourself, is one of the things she's been told. And she says, someone clearly didn't pass organic chemistry. As a vegetarian of nearly 20 years, I've eaten organic almost every day. If you think eating a single organic vegetable is going to do the trick, please. So she adds a lot of these different things that people have told her in the article.
I can only imagine people with disabilities encounter a lot of ridiculous stuff that's said mm-hmm. to them.
Definitely, yeah.
And you know, I mean, it's great that she can laugh it off here
mm-hmm.
And approach with some humor, but I'm sure it's not always something that's funny.
Definitely, yeah. And that's more seriously talked about in that first opinions piece by Olivia Visser. She gives this one anecdote where she was just walking somewhere, I think downtown, and then this couple behind her started just sort of whispering about how, they had this one disabled friend, and they thought the disabled friend was, like, faking their disability, and, you know, that's obviously no good to hear, and for her to just be walking and minding her own business, and, yeah, to hear that is just no good. So, yeah, Olivia takes a more serious perspective on those sort of things.
Yeah. Well, it's good to focus on these issues, because we've come a long way in recent decades on mm-hmm. this issue and many others, but as an issue like this and some of these perspectives and even testimonies, you could sort of say, show it, we still have a long way to go.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Excellent. Well, thanks for bringing those in. The new issue is out live now.
Mm-hmm.
How do people find it?
So you can read all of our weekly stories online at the-peak.ca and view our full digital issue all at once at issuu.com/peaksfu.
Great. Thanks for coming in. You'll be back next week to talk about your Pride issue.
Yes.
Thanks for coming in. Hannah Fraser of The Peak. One more issue this summer, and then you'll be returning in the fall mm-hmm. when the Peak will be hitting the newsstands with physical copies again.
Yes, that's right.
Excellent. All right. Thanks so much, Hannah, for joining us today. And once more, what's the way to find The Peak online?
Yeah, so you can follow us at the-peak.ca for our weekly stories, and also view our full digital issue all at once at issuu.com/peaksfu.
Great. Thanks so much. See you next week.
Thank you. See you.
All right. Up now is something new from English band The Fall. They've been kicking around since the 80s with leader Marky Smith. This is a new release from them, from a live album called States, and this track is called Middle Mass. From their recently released live album States, this is Middle Mass. And now it's time for our regular feature, Gardening with Embark, with Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society. Welcome to Gardening with Embark with Pablo Vimas.
Hi.
Welcome, Pablo.
Hi, good morning. Nice to be here.
Pablo is the gardens manager at Embark Sustainability Society here in the Student Union. They are our neighbor right across the hall. We've been talking to Pablo every week about what you need to be thinking about in your garden.
That's right, yes. So let's jump. We are in week 29. Oh, it's going very fast.
It is.
The weather, yes, it's nice, dry, and it brings lots of things to the garden. So this week we have in the garden the silks and tassels. The corn is on flower. Yeah, so when we plant corn, as you notice in our garden beds, we have plots 4 feet by 4 feet, mm-hmm. very small. So we tend to plant the wall plots with corn.
And that sort of arrangement, that as a chunk of it, is really important.
Correct, yes, because in the farm, we grow a full lot of corn, and the corn pollinates through wind.
Mm-hmm.
So in our small little plots, we need to make sure that the pollen that the plant produce falls into the silks.
Right.
So that is very important. So when in small gardens like ours, we clamp all the corn together, and then we manually pollinate the silks. So which means we cut the tassels, mm-hmm. which are full of pollen, and shake those pollen on top of the silks. So that is going one by one. Some plants have 2 to 3 corn ears, yeah. that needs to be pollinated. So right. it takes a bit of time. So the
silks, like when we eat the corn, we have a cob and we pull all the mm-hmm. the other leaves off, and there's all those threads in there. Those are the silks.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's when we pull all the leaves off. When it's all still on the plant, what does it look like?
Okay, yeah. So when you have your plant, you have the cobs of corn, which we call ears.
Yeah. Okay.
So those ears, we have 2 or 3 in a plant.
Yeah.
And those little, they are kind of bumps in the at the base of a leaf. And we just can see some silks, green silks, mm-hmm. popping out.
Yeah.
So those ones need to be pollinated. So each of those silks are linked to one kernel.
Oh, wow.
So that is important that we pollinate all the silks so all we have a cob full of kernels.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, that's the reason why we have a cob. And what is people looking in the market is peeling the cobs, the ears of corn.
Yeah.
Just to see if there is any gap in there,
mm-hmm.
because they don't want gap. But in our garden, that is very small. We try to ensure that all the kernels are the other silks are pollinated, and therefore we have kernels.
Right. So how do you make sure you're getting at all the silks? Do you just shake it off and cover it really well?
Yes, shake it off the tassels. But again, the pollen is just so tiny and any wind will take it all away.
Yeah.
So we just cut a bit of the tassel and shake on top of the silks. Yeah, that's time consuming, I would say, as well enjoyable, because you cannot rush.
Mm-hmm.
So you go there, pair of scissors, cut, shake it on top of each tassel. And then you are looking to hoping that your job is well done, and you will enjoy later that cup of corn. Like, oh yes, I did my job very well.
Right, you say it's time consuming, but obviously it's very, very important, because with such a small plot, you can't just count on the wind to give you the coverage you're really looking for.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. And that's so in the if you have a farm, most of the farm
has field.
Big field. Yeah, all the wind will pollinate, and you're sure that you will have a good cup of corn.
Great.
Of corn. Yeah.
What else are we worrying about in the garden this week?
Yes, at the moment we see plants like our cabbages that we've been keeping, hoping they make a head. Suddenly the leaves are turning silver.
Mm-hmm.
So they are not the green, bright green or dark green. They're turning into a silver shade. So it means that the plant is old enough. Mm-hmm. And now we just need to harvest whatever size of the cabbage you have in the cup. Right. Sometimes we might have a nice head, small head, mm-hmm. But sometimes we have nothing. But the leaves itself is telling, I'm silver, I'm time to move on.
Graham, we're also tending to our basil plants and making sure that they are producing leaves.
Yes. So basil, with this weather, it went nice into flowers. But again, when a plant turns into flowers, all the effort goes into making seeds. Mm-hmm. And from the basil, what we need is leaves. So now we need to trick the plant by pinching the flowers, trick the plant saying, oh, you have to do all to redo your seed process again. So, mm-hmm. And we encourage the plant to put a bit more leaves and extend the life cycle of the plant. So it's...
And I guess conversely, we have some plants that are actually producing fruit. Like I noticed I have some little pepper plants. And in that case, the fruit is actually coming out of the flowers.
Correct.
So yes. we don't want to get rid of those flowers.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so there's other, most of the fruit vegetables, like the peppers and tomatoes, they're fruit vegetables. Mm-hmm. We need to look after the flowers.
Yeah.
And once we see the tiny little flower turning into a fruit, we need to keep watering more constantly. Mm-hmm. Because now the water is being moved into the fruits, and we want to have juicy, nice tomatoes and nice crunchy peppers or chili peppers. So we need to keep constant with watering. So watering becomes very important during the fruit production.
Right. Mm-hmm. And our beans are also starting to come up this week.
Yes, the beans, they are coming up. And again, as I say, watering is very important, but if you recall, weeks back, we were talking about watering the soil, mm-hmm. not the plants. You had to keep doing that. I know that it's hot, and we think, like, if I spray a bit of water, it's refreshing the plants. Well, not necessarily. There are, for instance, the beans, they don't like water on the leaves. Mm-hmm. And that somehow stops the production of flowers. No flowers, no fruits, no beans. So don't water the leaves.
Right.
All right. So keep the leaves dry. With tomato doesn't like water on the leaves because we can create an environment that the tomato blight develops. Mm-hmm. And then we have tomato leaves getting sick, getting brown. And no leaves, no photosynthesis, no sugars, no food for the plant. So we are starving the plant, and the production of fruits will be very low. So again, keep watering the soil,
right.
No the leaves.
So we want to be walking around through the garden with our hose or our can, getting right at each plant rather than sort of standing back and sort of spraying the garden.
Correct, yes. Yeah, so watering is... active task. Mm-hmm. You walk through the garden watering the soil around the plant rather than being static and trying to simulate that you are a sprinkler, right. And spraying everything.
Right.
So that's not for beans and not for tomatoes. So that we prevent having diseases in the garden.
Excellent. And we're getting into the hot season, so we do need to water often.
Yes. Please water often, as I've been saying, twice a week, leaving 2 or 3 days in between. And rain is not in the forecast, so we are for a long, long time of watering by hand.
That's excellent. That's some great tips for this week for keeping our garden strong and growing. Thank you so much for joining us today, Pablo. Tell us
nice
a bit more
you.
About Embark.
Yes, so Embark is a non-profit organization managed and directed by students, and we are based in the SFU student building. You can find us through our website, embarksustainability.org, or through our social media channels, hashtag embarksustain.
Excellent. Thanks so much for joining us today. We'll talk to you again next week, Pablo.
Yeah, see you next week.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
And we're back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Speak Up here on Monday morning. And Peter is here to talk about his encounter with...
Ezra, how do you say it? Ezra Levant?
Ezra Levant.
Well,
Ezra Levant. Leader, we'll call him that. Leader.
No. What it is...
Pundit on Rebel Media?
Well, that may be a name for him. He was a lawyer for about 2 years. I admitted I'm get involved with the anti-COVID vaccine stuff. So Tamara Leach had a fundraiser at the Seventh-day Adventist Church over at White Rock, or a book signing, or whatever it was.
And was she was one of the leaders of the convoy?
Well, she was a charge with, I forget the other person's name. She became high profile. It was sort of ad hoc. The whole Ottawa trucker convoy was kind of more of an ad hoc thing. She was, for whatever reason, she was seen as one of the quasi-organizers. But right. She has, Rebel News has picked up her legal expenses, and they also published a book by her. So I went over there to... the thing was, I don't have internet at home. It's hard for me to get these internet tickets. Well, I just said, I'm going to go there anyway, maybe sneak in free or whatever. But anyway, so, and I was unexpected. Ezra Levant was working the crowd, us lined up.
Right.
And I didn't expect to see him, right? So I said to him, I said, I don't like the fact Conrad Black's involved with your organization. Because he was going to speak to her with the other people going around. And Ezra Levant, who I'd seen him one time in person this time, and he's very unflappable. He goes, you weren't the first person who told me that.
Right.
Like, it was sort of like, oh, I hear your argument. And and then he kind of said, oh, he's a very interesting person. Mm-hmm. I said, no, you shouldn't. And Ezra, you have a chance, if you're hearing, to recant. Now, I'm going to say what the problem is with Rebel News having it shows their hypocrisy, because first of all, before he got placed in jail in the United States and all that, this guy is ultra establishment. This man went to Bilderberg conferences, now the World Economic Forum, which Rebel News goes outside of, but they're very critical of it. And the Bilderbergs are still going on the same sort of global networking. Conrad Black was going there, made friends with Henry Kissinger, and Kissinger stopped being his friend when all the legal troubles got a bit too much for him, and Henry sort of just said, "Well, I bombed Cambodia, and I'm leaving Conrad Black." He didn't say that, but, it's the same thing.
He bombed Cambodia, but fudging business stuff was too much. A line he wouldn't cross.
No, it was actually just a side note. Nixon was the one who gave the go-ahead. It was Henry Kissinger's idea. But I'm just saying that this Conrad Black is bad news. Mm-hmm. And they should, if Rebel News really had integrity, they should never have had, and they ought to apologize for any involvement they had. Because what Conrad Black did was defraud investors, people that had stock in the company, and he misused that. And he should have still be in jail somewhere, as far as I'm concerned. But the thing about Conrad Black is that he the establishment just forgoing him. He was ultra establishment.
He was very much so.
Yeah, and
he got himself appointed to the House of Lords in the UK.
Right.
Even
I'm glad you pointed that out. I would have forgotten that, because that is outrageous. And Henry Kissinger helped him up with that, and Margaret Thatcher, and just really bad. And by the way, as a side note about the House of Lords, people now they're saying, "Oh, we're getting other people now," but that you inherited a seat in the House of Lords in many cases. Mm-hmm. And it's still the case, even though they're trying to say, oh, it's based on merit now.
Yeah, they made some changes during the Blair labor years, but I don't remember the exact ones. I believe up until then, it was primarily you got there by inheriting your father's seat. And it would always be your father because there's a whole, you know, aristocratic primogeniture thing in the UK.
No, there was a big rigmarole about, I think Conrad Black had to stop being Canadian to be in the House of Lords or something like this. But it's interesting. There's things I do agree with Rebel News. It's interesting that Ezra, who's Jewish, has taken just the Israeli side. But before October 7th, the gang of them went to Israel, and they were like 2 miles away from the illegal settlements. And there's also a visual component to it. And one of them were like 2 miles away and said, oh, why are they saying there's problems? Because you're 2 miles away from the darn thing.
From actually seeing it.
Yeah. So, I mean, democracy now, I think, basically, as far as that goes. And Amy Goodman's Jewish, too, isn't she?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think so. But she just rightfully says Israeli military is not conducting itself properly. I mean, but Ezra, I don't know. He's kind of unflappable, as I mm-hmm. said. I was hearing a bit of his talking to other people, but I had said my piece. But I don't know. I mean, they were kind of really big on defending people who were having trouble with the COVID restrictions and all that. Right. Whereas Democracy Now! Was sort of saying, oh, wear a mask and all this. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm a smorgasbord of both of them, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, it's more – some of the stuff, it's more interesting. I think a lot of people should maybe hear it if they haven't heard it. But there's certain things I don't agree with as such, other things I do. Yeah. But you get sort of a more, I think if you hear a little, like you hear the show coming up now, Democracy Now!, you get one perspective. And have you ever checked much on them over the years?
On Rebel News?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, not at all?
Not really.
Yeah. Oh, not, you didn't even see one little, you know about them.
I've seen stuff that comes up, but I don't go to their site and look for their, what their.
Well, what context do you know about them?
I see stuff posted, you know, in other social media and stuff from time to time.
And you never go to them? You never.
I look at the articles sometimes.
So what article did you check up on?
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
I look at a lot of stuff, so I don't really remember specifically what I saw of theirs.
Well, the other thing I disagree on them, I forget them. Actually, I met him, another one of the Rebel News people, when Greta Thunberg came to Vancouver.
Yeah.
And David Menzies, I think. David Menzies I met, just mm-hmm. incidentally. But he's really down on homeless people. Like, I don't, I'm serious. It's really bad. He's sort of, there was a Toronto encampment, and I really don't, that's another thing with Rebel News. I don't agree with that. I mean, some other things I do, I can see their points, but and other things, like, I don't. Anyway.
Right.
So we get after you hear Democracy Now!, maybe the viewers or listenership will go to Rebel News,
and then they should go to Fox News, and then they should go.
No, don't. You know what? Okay, I'm going to say something. Okay. He's better than all of them. Ezra Levant's better than Alex Jones, Glenn Beck, all of them. If you're going to hear that point of view, he's better than Fox News. Okay. Yeah. Like, he actually interviewed Glenn Beck and Alex Jones. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, Ezra, you're better than them because he's a journalist at least. He was a lawyer for 2 years, so he kind of – I mean, he gets stuff wrong, like with Conrad Black. He sure got that one wrong. But he has a bit of a background, And he's a lot better than Alex Jones or Glenn Beck.
All right. Well, we're almost out of time here on this episode of Speak Up. Thanks, Peter, for joining me today. Thanks also to Hannah Fraser from The Peak for joining us, and Connor Ashton for his interview with the SFU Pipe Band, and Pablo Vimas for Gardening with Embark. Democracy Now! Will be up in just a few moments at 11 o'clock. At 12 noon is coming Wandering Rhythms with Your World Music, and later on, typically Tuesdays at 3 o'clock, and coming live at 2 is Daniel, so stay tuned for that too.
Hi.